This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. If you don't set much store in the Mayan calendar and aren't expecting the rapture anytime soon, you may not spend much time thinking about the world ending. Our guest Craig Childs does a lot. He ventured all over the planet to the Earth's most extreme places to find small clues and insights into the colossal changes our planet could go through, meaning ice ages, supervolcanoes, and the conclusion of planetary life cycles in the way, way, way distant future. Craig has published more than a dozen critically acclaimed books on nature, science, and adventure. His new book, Apocalyptic Planet, Field Guide to the Ever-Ending Earth, describes the changing Earth and established science proving that the planet is constantly moving toward its end. He's going to be giving a multimedia presentation at the Red River Theater in Concord tonight and is around New England for the next few days. Craig, great to have you on Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me here.
Scientists do agree that huge portions of life on Earth have been wiped out, what, five times throughout the Earth's 4.5 billion years?
Yeah, five major mass extinctions.
So are you convinced it's happening again? Or always?
Yeah, you know, there are always extinctions happening, always background extinctions. But you're looking at a time here when species loss is dramatic enough that it really stands out in Earth's history. This looks like the sixth major extinction to happen on Earth going on right now.
Your travels took you from the Bering Strait to Tibet and many places in between to look at very extreme places. Now, what were you looking for that could tell us something about the end of the Earth?
Well, each one of these landscapes is its own story of if X and Y happen, this is what the future will look like on this planet. And I'm looking back over billions of years at different catastrophes that the Earth has faced. And what does the planet look like when a desert consumes it? What does it look like when it's completely encased in ice? So each place that I went ended up being an analog for these different endings, these different radical changes to the planet.
And you've seen some of this evidence of, you know, what must have happened to life when a desert consumed it. I remember reading about, you know, finding a fence post in the middle of the desert, knowing that life had been there at one time.
Oh, yeah. Finding fossils of water holes that had existed in the desert 100,000 years ago, and the place is just covered with bones, thousands of bones. So you can see that moment as it happened. You can actually see the drought that consumed this place and how the animals died. And this was a long time ago. This happens over and over again.
Well, we tend to think of these things either as happening a long time ago or happening far in the future. But you recently wrote a New York Times op-ed about the seas rising and how that is going to change our cities. Now, what lessons do we need to take away from this storm, Superstorm Sandy, as we're calling it? Is it a wake-up call?
I think it should be a wake-up call because, everything should be a wake-up call because we need to realize that this planet really isn't the level playing field that we think it is, that coastlines aren't permanent, we can see down there right now that so much changes so quickly and we need to look at how that changes and how you prevent those changes or how at least you mitigate their impact.
Well, I know that we've talked to people on this program about, you know, geoengineering experiments, either seeding clouds or doing something to change the planet's climate or to slow the growth or protect it, I guess is the way we'd put it. What do you think? I mean, is that like spitting in the wind?
I don't think it's so much spitting in the wind. I think there are some extraordinary dangers with major geoengineering projects of really trying to change the climate because after working with scientists for the last 3 years on this book project, you know, speaking to people across disciplines, I came away realizing, you know, we know some basic things about how this planet works, but there are many complex levels that we don't understand. And one researcher was saying to me, okay, what if we limit incoming solar radiation by 10% and then found out it was supposed to be 5%? What kind of devastation are we looking at that point? How much can we really consciously steer the future of this planet? It's It's not an entirely stable place, and we don't really know how it works. We know very basic things about this Earth.
Well, obviously, you've looked at a lot of evidence of how the planet has changed and looked to how it may change. This is something that, you know, can put strike fear in the hearts of people. You know, the world is going to end. It appeals to a certain apocalyptic vision. I'm just wondering how you, do you just take the long view? Does this bother you? Does it keep you awake at night?
Well, I guess I came away from this saying the world actually doesn't end, that there is no apocalypse. There is no moment that the bright light flashes and it's all over. The end is more of a process. It happens in some places and not in others. It's not a one-way trip. And so I come away saying, oh, this is actually probably going to work out okay. There will be devastation. There will be resilience. That's always been the case. We can figure out how to change our impact on the world and you know, maybe to back off a bit. But I don't think we're at a point of no return to a planet that is devastated. I think that we have many options.
We're talking with Craig Childs. He's the author of Apocalyptic Planet: Field Guide to the Ever-Ending Earth. He's going to be giving a multimedia presentation tonight at the Red River Theater in Concord, and we'll be reading throughout New England in the next couple of days. Well, you mentioned you spoke with a lot of scientists during this book, writing this book. You talk with a professor at the University of Edinburgh who created a computer model of how deserts form by global warming. Now, what happened to the Earth, and how different were the results that he came up with from what's going on now?
Well, his experiment was a very simple one where it's a computer model of a planet that is occupied by flowers, black flowers and white flowers, and the two alternate to control the climate, basically. And he found that when he turned up the heat enough, these deserts would appear on his imaginary world, just like deserts appear now. But when he turned it up by tiny increments over this threshold, suddenly the deserts just spread and consumed the entire planet. And even if he tried to back off on it, the planet died. He lost control of it. And so he's seeing this runaway effect that can happen. You know, of course, this is a very simple model. The Earth is more complex. It doesn't always allow for those runaway effects. But he came back saying, wow, deserts kind of, once they get going, they make themselves. They reproduce themselves.
You've just brought to mind something that I hear a lot of, a narrative about, you know, climate change. It's that glaciers melt, sea levels rise, coastal cities get destroyed. I mean, there is a kind of very linear thinking about it, and what you're bringing into it is the complex kind of forces that are going on in the Earth. Can you give us some insight on how those changes or how that narrative should work?
Yeah, it's not as linear as that. Ice melts, seas rise, and swallow the Bering Land Bridge that stretches between Asia and North America and allows the Pacific to flow over into the Atlantic across the pole, which causes temperatures to change and ice to form and seas to drop. And that's one small piece. There are so many intricate nonlinear relationships where the question itself affects the outcome, where things are not this straight A plus B equals C. This is a much more complex world, which is, you know, we're learning that decade by decade, and I think we know that innately. But it is not just the one-way trip we imagine it to be.
But your book gives us several different examples of how humans are dependent on a kind of predictable weather, you know, or the Dust Bowl, for example, completely upset things. Desert nomads, farmers. Can humans outsmart nature with, you know, ways of mitigating the climate or being super accurate in their predictions of what is going to happen to the weather?
I don't think we can outsmart it. We can definitely try. We're cunning species. We come up with amazing solutions to our problems, and I think we will come up with many more solutions. I mean, that's what we do. We keep thinking and processing, but we're trying to outsmart something that is not even smart. It is so beyond us. It is such a complex system that we can't outthink it, but we can manipulate it, and we can learn where our manipulations fail, and we do as time goes on. I imagine this species, as we know it, will be around for a long, long time. I'm seeing this civilization. I see no reason for the civilization to be falling anytime soon. So I think that we're going to be around long enough to figure out some mistakes. Maybe our mistakes will drive us to extinction. Let's hope that's not the case. And to keep that from being the case, let's look at how our manipulations actually work.
Well, Craig Childs, a pleasure talking to you, and just a bold and fascinating book to read. Thank you.
Thank you, Virginia.
Craig Child's latest book is called Apocalyptic Planet, Field Guide to the Ever-Ending Earth. He's going to be giving a multimedia presentation at the Red River Theater tonight, at the Lichtenstein Center for the Arts in Pittsfield, Massachusetts tomorrow, and he'll be at Longfellow Books in Portland, Maine on Friday. We do have a link to more on the book and to his tour at wordofmouthradio.org. Coming up, the director Alfred Hitchcock is the subject of two new biopics. So we're going to be looking at why he still casts such a long shadow and why horror still appeals. That's when Word of Mouth continues.